Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Purdy Insurance. Visit Purdy Insurance on Market Street in Sunbury or visit online at purdyinsurance.com. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. And today's show is brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. The Purdy's have served this valley for decades. Reason, they've been able to find the best insurance at the right price for their customers. Auto, home, life, business insurance, and if a claim happens, they act as if it happened to them. They jump right in there. They are your advocate. That's what you want out of your insurance agent. You want somebody who cares about you, and you're not just a number. Well, that's Purdy Insurance. Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. Time now for our play-by-play call of the day. The Steelers get it done with Bill Hillgrove on 100.9 The Valley.
Ben gets the shotgun snap. He's back. He waits. He pumps. He still pumps. He fires, and that's a touchdown for Juju Smith-Schuster from 11 yards out.
Juju Smith-Schuster, I think, is going to be a good player for the Steelers. He may not be lightning fast, but he's got great size, excellent hands, and I think he's going to be a guy that's going to help the Steelers as time goes along. Despite how unhappy it could make Antonio Brown. All right. Eagles won again yesterday, now 3-1. They beat the L.A. Chargers out at the StubHub Center in Carson yesterday. And Matt Leon joins us from KYW in Philadelphia. It's always a pleasure, sir. Great to hear you on the other end.
Happy to be with you.
All right. Found a running game against the Chargers. I know losing Sproles hurt, but what were your thoughts on seeing that part?
It was impressive. LeGarrette Blount was really, really good yesterday. He had one of the greatest power runs I've ever seen an Eagle running back have, a 68-yard burst in the fourth quarter that helped set up their last touchdown. You've seen video of it. It was just classic Blount, just tossing off defenders, you know, breaking tackles, a great stiff arm for the last 10, 15 yards where he extended the run. He had well over 100 yards, and the most impressive part of the day might have been when the Eagles got the ball back after San Diego pushed within two with about 6.5 minutes left. The Eagles just played keep away. They just ground the clock all the way down to 000, first down after first down. Corey Clement, the rookie running back, had some key carries. Wendell Smallwood, and of course, LeGarrette Blount had a big one inside the 20 that was the final first down that put the cap on things. But they can run the ball like that. Carson Wentz makes the right decision much, much more often than not. They're going to be tough to beat offensively.
The Redskins will play the Chiefs tonight. You'd have to feel the Chiefs are the favorite going into that one. Here we are at this point. Dallas has lost a couple of times. Maybe tonight we'll find out if Washington's lost a couple of times. Has the attitude about this team now changed at the quarter pole of this season?
I think so. I think, obviously 3-1, and really you look at the one loss was to Kansas City, but it was a game where the Eagles were right there in the fourth quarter. Maybe they make a couple of the different decisions, but I think the way they beat the Giants last week with that 61-yard field goal and the excitement of it, that really kind of turned some heads. And then going out here, yes, the Chargers were winless, but I think this was a tough spot for the Eagles, going east to west, coming off an emotional win over a divisional opponent and playing a non-conference game. And the Eagles are missing some key pieces. Fletcher Cox did not play yesterday. They're still missing Ronald Darby at cornerback. And to be able to overcome that and win on the road, and the way they won, you know, holding off the Chargers the entire way, I think has really gotten a lot of people excited. And like you mentioned, it's pretty obvious that the Giants are going nowhere.
Yeah,
Dallas has shown significant issues so far through two games. I don't think people thought much of Washington until last Sunday night when they just dominated Oakland. And I think that kind of maybe changed the narrative on Washington a bit. And we'll see with this matchup with the Chiefs if they can really – if they win this game, then all of a sudden I think it turns into a two-team race at the top. But I think right now when you look at the entire landscape of the NFC East, I think right now the Eagles are the best team.
Yeah, and that's interesting. Defensively, have they made progress defensively along the way, or were there a couple things that people should be concerned about from yesterday?
No, I think there should be reasons for concern if the Eagles aren't able to maintain this success. Now, like I said, you don't have Fletcher Cox and you don't have your best cornerback, Ronald Darby. And in addition to that, buried, you know, as far as injuries are concerned, they were missing guys like Jalen Watkins, Corey Graham. You know, you're missing your second team safeties who get a lot of, you know, playing time in dime situations, stuff like that. So to be fair, a lot of pieces missing. However, the Chargers were able to go vertical on them a lot. The first touchdown, a 75-yard touchdown pass by Phillip Rivers. They had several other big plays. The rookie corner, Rasul Douglas, as rookie corners do, struggled. You know, he was a guy chasing a lot. And next up when they play Arizona, if there's one thing Arizona can do, it's go vertical. Mm-hmm. So that is something you're going to want to see them clean up, and you're going to want to see improve, because once again, kind of lost in all this as well, is the Giants torched them in the fourth quarter of that game last week. We all forgot about that because of the incredible field goal that Jake Elliott hit. But the secondary had significant problems in the fourth quarter. It felt like once the Giants kind of figured out some personnel matchups and stuff like that. So the positive, you're able to have struggles like that and still win the game, and you can learn and improve off the W is much easier. However, I think the negative is people tend to poo-poo those problems, and the winning kind of papers them over until they really come back to bite you.
I want to ask you a little bit about Penn for a moment. That's a hard one.
Yes.
Ohio Dominican, they beat, then they won at Lehigh. You're there, you're sitting there, you're doing this game. Penn takes the lead in the fourth quarter, and Dartmouth has 80 yards in front of them. Take me through what your thought process was as you're trying to convey this to the audience as they played it out.
Well, you thought they just needed one play. And the one thing they didn't get even the entire game was kind of a big play on either side of the ball, a play that really kind of grabbed it, because Dartmouth played that game. You know, if it was a basketball game, it was played at Dartmouth's pace the whole way.
Right.
They nickel and dimed, you know, first and 10 became second and 4, became third and 1, became a first down. They needed 6 yards, they got 8. They needed 10 yards, they got 12. You know, they didn't have a play, I think, longer than 19 yards until fourth play from the end of the game. So you just kind of kept waiting for something to happen where somebody jumped up and made a play, and it just didn't happen. Dartmouth, to their credit, converted a big fourth down near midfield on their final drive, and much like, kind of in a different way, how the Eagles ran the final 6:44 off the clock to just ice the game on yesterday. On Friday, Dartmouth ran the final 5:47 or whatever it was, and culminated with scoring the winning touchdown on fourth and goal at the 1 yard line as time expired. So you got to give Dartmouth a lot of credit. It's a difficult loss for the Quakers. You can still win an Ivy title with one loss in the leg, but what it does is now you've got no margin for error, really. And, you know, the league is tough. It's probably as tough as it's ever been, so it's going to be difficult. But this is what happened 2 years ago. They lost their Ivy League opener to Dartmouth at home, still managed to win a piece of the league title, so we'll wait and see.
And, in fact, they've got one more non-conference game than nothing but Ivy games after. They got Central coming up in Newbury, or Central Connecticut State, I should say. I grew up in Connecticut, so I'm so used to saying Central and Southern in my lifetime. But, yeah, Central Connecticut at New Britain, that'll be their last one at Saturday at 1.
Yeah, and that's one you would hope that they can shake some things off, get back on track, because after that, they go to New York and play Columbia, and oh, by the way, coached by former Penn head man Al Bagnoli, and oh, by the way, Columbia's 3-0.
Right.
So, you know, it doesn't get any easier.
And they got Yale after that at Franklin Field.
Yeah, Ivy's going to be tough this year. Ivy's going to be tough.
Always a pleasure, my friend. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Matt Leon, KYW in Philadelphia. We'll come back with more in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by Purdy Insurance. All right, any additional details we get on what happened in Las Vegas late last night? We'll pass along to in our news break at the bottom of the hour. At least 58 killed, hundreds hurt in that Las Vegas concert attack. I was actually in that area one time. We were there for the basketball tournament at the Orleans. And we got there on a Sunday, and I went to Mass at the Church of the Holy Redeemer. And that big park where they have Mandalay Bay is at one corner and the church is at the other. So I've actually been to that area. It's a big open area there. And it is stunning what happened there. And I know the president's going to go to Puerto Rico tomorrow. He's going to Las Vegas on Wednesday. And then the news that Tom Petty has now died at the age of 66. So there's a lot of news, and we'll update it for you at the bottom of the hour. Sports news wise, first of all, Wilton Spate's going to be out a few weeks for Michigan. John O'Korn out of Huntington, Pennsylvania, about 35 miles south of State College, is going to be the starting quarterback. You have the playoffs now set. In Major League Baseball, the first game of the playoffs will be the one-game playoff at Yankee Stadium tomorrow night between the Twins and the Yankees. The Twins are an absolutely remarkable story because they were a 100-loss team last year. And they've now won their way in. And Irvin Santana is going to go for the Twins tomorrow. And Luis Severino will be on the mound for the Yankees in a one-game playoff. Then, the next night, you'll have the Arizona Diamondbacks hosting the Colorado Rockies, and both of them had really good seasons. By the way, tomorrow night's game's on ESPN, by the way. TBS is going to have the Arizona-Colorado matchup at Chase Field. John Gray for Colorado and Zach Greinke, the ace on the mound for Arizona. Then on Friday on Fox Sports 1, the Red Sox and the Astros play game one of their best of five set. Chris Sale against undecided. I like the odds against undecided. Surprised Houston didn't name a starter yet. They've had plenty of time to set their rotation as to how they wanted to do it. The Red Sox, because they clinched the division on Saturday, could afford to push Sale back. And I think the extra rest is really going to help him. He'll be in double digits and strikeouts. So that's the matchup that you have. Let's see. That's going to be, by the way, on Thursday, the October 5th, at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. Friday is the Red Sox and Houston game 2, and the Cubs will take on the Nats at night. So the Red Sox-Houston matchups on Fox Sports 1 in the afternoon at 2, but at 7:30 at night, it's the Cubs and Washington. I'm in Chicago on Friday night, and they're going to be at Washington. Then they'll play Game 2 again. And that will be on Saturday at 5:30. Fenway Park gets the Red Sox and Houston on Sunday. Then Monday is also the Red Sox and Houston if necessary, and Nationals and Cubs at Wrigley Field on Monday. So that's the way those shape up. Now the other ones you have to see who's playing first. You don't know who's playing. You know, with the playoffs. You know, because, you know, the Dodgers are waiting and the Indians are waiting. So, yeah. So that's all set. These one-game playoffs. It is amazing the first time I've seen, obviously, a one-game playoff before. I mean, because, obviously, the Red Sox play that famous one-game playoff. And the tension in the ballpark is incredible, where you hang on every single pitch. I can't imagine concessions do well in these one-game playoffs. I remember the one World Series game I went to as a fan. It was game two of the 2004 World Series, the Red Sox and the Cardinals, the Curt Schilling bloody sock game. So I was at that game. And it was different than any other baseball game I'd been to. Why? Because nobody got up. Nobody left. And I sat there and I looked around like nobody was eating. Nobody was having anything to drink. Nobody got up to use the restroom. Well, that's these one-game playoffs like. And you listen to the noise in the ballpark. I remember when the Pirates hosted the Reds in a one-game playoff, the one the Pirates won, they beat Johnny Cueto. That place sounded like there was 5 million people in there. So these one-game playoffs that they've had in the majors, I'd call them a big success. And then, I mean, you're going to see tomorrow when the Twins play the Yankees. It's going to be through the roof in terms of what it sounds like in the park. ESPN has tomorrow night's game. And then the Rockies D-backs game at Chase Field is going to be Wednesday, and that's going to be on TBS. So there you go. Next half hour, by the way, we'll have Ben Jones will be on the show with us. It's also the first day of basketball practice. Basketball has a little more latitude than football does. We're talking about football, you know, starting, you know, they took the 2-a-days you didn't have. They tacked it on to the front, so it was a longer preseason. What about 5 weeks? Well, it's five and a half weeks to the opener in basketball, which will be on Friday night, November 10th. Penn State will play Campbell here. I'm not sure what the Bucknell opener is. And I apologize for that, not knowing that off the top. Let's see. So I'm looking at my email here, Matt. Let's see. Sporting News wanted to do an interview about the Michigan game, even though I know I'm supposed to say Northwestern, Northwestern, Northwestern. Let's see.
Of course. Of course.
SB Nation wants to do something Wednesday night. And Coach Franklin asked if it's possible to capture a Generations of Greatness uniform reaction from. Okay. Sure. And there you go.
Not a bad lineup of emails there.
It sounds like more work. Well, this time at least I'm just sitting there answering questions. That's not so bad. So, yeah. There you go. That's all right. Get those done. Take care of them one at a time. One thing that's good is that, you know, I got Northwestern done yesterday with like one or two little minor adjustments. And it's also fortunate there's a bye week because I'll need the bye week to figure out the Michigan depth chart.
Yeah, definitely. That came at a good time.
Yeah, well, you know what? I mean, I'm just going to sit down with a tape and go, okay, write down numbers. This guy, this guy, this guy. Okay, that looks fun. I think I'll be able to figure it out. And somebody, you know, it's Somebody asked me about that, and I said, you know what? I can, Coach Harbaugh could care less what my needs are for my job. I said, to be honest with you, I'd say, what a coincidence. I could care less what his needs are. He wouldn't know me if he walked past me in the street, so I don't think he could care at all what my needs are for whatever. We're in the Sunbury Motors studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, KIA, Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. And today's show brought to you by Purdy Insurance.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors studio, here's Steve Jones.
Great to be with you on the show today, brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. The Purdys have served this valley for decades, and they have long-term customers. Why? Because they know they're going to get the right insurance where they're covered, and those customers also know they're going to get it for the best price. It's going to fit their budget. Whether it's auto, home, life, business insurance, whatever it happens to be. And if there happens to be a claim where suddenly you need your insurance, it's why you pay those premiums, your advocate will be Purdy Insurance. They will go to bat for you right away, and they'll act as if the incident happened to them. They are your partner. It is Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. I'm in the Sunbury Motors studio, Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. All right. Let's get to it here. Ben Jones, statecollege.com, joins us now to talk Penn State football. Ben, welcome back. It's great to hear you.
Hey, Steve. Thanks for having me.
Let's start with the football part of it. Game five, what did you think of what you watched on Saturday?
You know, I think you see a team that's figured out ways to win even when it's not always looking pretty. We talked about that a little bit against Iowa, that, you know, there were moments where the offense didn't really click, but, you know, there were moments when it looked like, you know, the sort of offense that everybody raves about, and their ability to get down the field quickly, their ability to get a lot of different targets involved. And I think ultimately that's the mark of a good team, is not always, you know, are you going out with every drive and scoring a million points every game? It's really, you know, when you start to click, what are you able to do with it? And I think, you know, certainly you can't ask for a better start than the one that Penn State had, between all the, you know, the forced turnovers and Saquon Barkley's kickoff return. But I think ultimately, you know, you're seeing a team that's playing well for the most part in all three phases, and finding ways to make big plays in all three phases. And, you know, nobody's going to be perfect. And I think ultimately Penn State's sort of embracing that they're maybe going to have to grind out some of these games. But, you know, at the end of the day, you're scoring 45 points and feel like you had to work for it a little bit. You know, there are certainly worse places to be than that.
What do you think of the defense through five games? What do you thought of them?
I mean, I think, you know, it's kind of ironic because everyone, I think, went into this season feeling like the defense was at least the biggest question mark, that there were guys that were going to have to step up, and could they do that? And I think everyone sort of felt like they could, but you had to see it, and the offense was going to score points. Could the defense kind of make that be enough? And I think, you know, to a certain extent, you know, the defense has been the stronger unit as a whole outside of anyone named Saquon Barkley. You know, I think they've played outstanding football. I think when they've been in opportunities to make big plays, they've done so. And when they've been in spots where Penn State's needed a stop, or felt like, you know, they needed the defense to step up, they've done that. I think, you know, there was right after Indiana got its second touchdown, they got the ball, and there's this sort of feeling that the momentum was swinging a little bit the other way, and then they're off the field, and I think just about 45 seconds or so. And it's moments like that where the defense has really stepped up. And I think, you know, you look at guys like Marcus Allen and you know, Grant Haley and Jason Kambinda, and these guys have played a lot of football, and they sort of sense those moments when they've got to step up, and all three of those guys have made plays this season, you know, across the board at key moments. And that's really, you know, what they need out of this defense right now.
Right. Kambinda and Allen, two veterans. It just seems they're in the middle of everything. And I thought, you know, and Haley and Campbell played pretty well on Saturday as well. These are the seniors on this team right now, Ben.
Yeah, I mean, these guys look like they kind of sense the moment that they're in. You know, if you figure a guy like, you know, all three of those guys we just mentioned, these are guys that have been around the block. They've seen a lot. They've probably experienced more than most anybody's ever going to experience in their college career, and you kind of get that sense. You know, I felt in the second half of the Iowa game, you saw Jason Kabinda kind of play like a guy who was like, no, we're not going to have this season end, you know, have this run end quite like this just yet, and sort of step up his game a little bit. You know, Marcus Allen, I said going into the year, you know, Penn State wanted to make the playoffs. They needed him to be fourth or fifth on the team in tackles just in terms of where those plays are ending. But, you know, he's a guy that's up by the line of scrimmage on some plays by the time the ball is snapped and so active, right, you know, around the line of scrimmage that, you know, all three of those guys, all those guys they've got on that defensive side of the ball that are seniors are really stepping their game up. And that's what you need out of your seniors, especially in a season like the one Penn State's having.
Right. I mean, no question about that. When you look at the offense right now and the running game, what are you seeing?
You know, I mean, I think it's easy to point to the offensive line as being an issue there, and I don't think there's any question that they're maybe not quite as good as people thought they were going to be this season. At the same time, I think in their defense, you know, they haven't been quite healthy and quite all in the same places that said that they wanted to be at the beginning of the year. So there's some acclimating there. But I think ultimately, you know, it boils down to the fact that, you know, you've got the best playmaker in the country, and probably, you know, Saquon Barkley's obviously a running back, but he does so many other things that he almost kind of transcends his position a bit. But you've got the best, you know, running back in the nation, and he's averaging 2 or 3 yards a carry against Indiana. At the same time, you know, Indiana the past two seasons has said, you are not going to run the ball, and they've loaded up the box, and they've said, you know, just, you're going to have to pass it if you want to win. So, you know, there's no amount of blocking that can win a numbers game for you if they've just got more guys.
That's right.
But, you know, Penn State wants to win the Big Ten. If they want to make the playoffs, they're going to have to be able to run the ball between the tackles. And so far, they haven't really been able to do that. And, you know, Saquon, for all the magical plays he can do, you know, sooner or later, football is just easier when you do the things that normal people can do. And I think if they can get 4 or 5 yards between the tackles, that'll make their life a lot easier.
Right. Northwestern coming up. What's the early read you have on them?
Yeah, I mean, it seems like every Northwestern team, you know, that you've ever really seen under Pat Fitzgerald, they fight hard. They are good defensively. You know, they don't make tons of mistakes on offense. They've kind of been a little up and down this year. I thought they played Wisconsin pretty tough for at least, you know, the first 2.5 quarters of that game. And then Wisconsin, especially on the road, that's a tough place to play, even with an early kick. You know, they played pretty well against Bowling Green, the week before.
It was Bowling Green.
Bowling Green, where a team, an offense that's been known to score a lot of points over the past few years, struggled a little bit against Duke. I think Clayton Thorson's a guy who's been reliable for them. He's completing 64% of his passes, playing all right. And, you know, Northwestern, you got that 11 o'clock kick locally, has always been kind of a weird thing, the long grass. Never been an easy place for Penn State to play, but certainly it's not the best Northwestern team Pat Fitzgerald has had, but at the same time, Northwestern has never been a pushover win, no, regardless of how good they may be in terms of their record.
Of course, you've experienced going out there when it happens to be an 11 a.m. local time start, which, by the way, is still noon Eastern time. It's still a noon start, but it's 11 a.m. out there. Any thought process about the start time for this thing?
I mean, I'm sure it's not ideal for guys, especially, you know, the traveling team that's not used to all of this sort of stuff. But, you know, I think one of the best things that this Penn State team's been able to do over the past 12 months is they really do buy into the, you know, everyone sort of says that it's cliche that they want to go 1-0 that week and put things behind them and not look too far ahead. And I think, for the most part, you talk about leaders and seniors, and these guys have done a good job of sort of focusing on the task at hand, and maybe you start a little slow, and that's happened in the past, but at the same time, you know, I think they know what's on the line, and I think they realize that you can't afford against any team to kind of wait an extra hour to finally get going. So I don't think it's ideal, and certainly I know that when I'm waking up on Saturday morning for an 11 o'clock kick, I'm sure I won't be less than thrilled that everything got moved back an hour. You know, whether that, you know, impairs the judgment, the decisions I make the night before, I guess we'll see. But without a doubt, it's not ideal. But at the same time, I think these guys are pretty well equipped to kind of shake out the cobwebs and get going.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Ben, thanks so much. Always a pleasure. Appreciate the time.
Yep, thanks for having me, Steve. I'll see you out there.
Ben Jones, staycollege.com. Tomorrow, Brad Nessler, CBS Sports, Teddy Greenstein, Chicago Tribune, as we continue on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by Purdy Insurance. All right, great to have you with us. ESPN was not going to show the national anthem tonight, but after what happened in Las Vegas, they changed their mind. They will show it this evening. You know, they just thought it was just better, you know, for them just to get into the game and go that route. They just thought at this point that's how they'd approach it. But then what happened in Las Vegas made them change their mind, so they're going to do that.
That's probably the right call on their part.
Yeah. Now, they've shown it in previous seasons, but they made the change this year, even as the idea of the protests were looming, it says, to use the time to highlight matchup storylines, things like that. The network did not carry the anthem September 18th between the Giants and the Detroit Lions. But after what happened in Las Vegas, they decided that they had to do it tonight. So they'll do that between Kansas City and the Redskins. That's actually going to be a pretty good game tonight.
Absolutely. And another big test for the Redskins after the big win at home last week against the Raiders.
Yeah, it absolutely is. And Kansas City has been playing great. I mean, they are the only undefeated team left.
That's exactly right. Kareem Hunt, we'll see what he's made of again tonight.
Yeah.
He's been sensational.
He has been. I think he's on the Suits Fantasy League team.
I wish I had him on mine right now.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly right. He's just been that good. Most part of the games, I thought the Steelers-Ravens game was boring yesterday. But a lot of the other games were really good. I thought the Carolina-Patriots game was really good.
Huge win for Carolina.
For the most part, though, finally Seattle broke it open. I thought the Colts Seahawks game wasn't bad last night, even though, you know, ratings wise, there's no way that's going to be a winner. No way.
I don't know how NBC got dumped with that game, but it ended up playing in their favor for at least the first half before Seattle started dominating and pulling away.
You have to remember when it's picked. The idea was you'd have Andrew Luck.
That's true, right, against Russell Wilson. Yeah,
right.
Good point.
So that means – so you're looking – you have to remember when the game is picked, what they're thinking about at that time. Like, okay, we can get Andrew Luck and Russell Wilson, which quarterbacks mean a lot. And it's like if you could pick a pitching matchup, I like the Red Sox to play the Dodgers. And not only that, it's going to be Chris Sale against Clayton Kershaw. All right, okay, we want to carry that game. Well, they look at the quarterbacks in that way. Well, you don't know that it's going to take Andrew Luck forever to get back from his injury.
Looks like he'll be back at practice too this week, Andrew Luck.
Yeah, well, that's not good enough for NBC.
Exactly, one week too late.
The game. Let's see. Sunday Night Football, 11.0 rating, down 5% from last week when the Redskins beat the Raiders 27-10. But I want to point out that going into the week, I said on the show last Monday that the Sunday night rating would be down this week anyway because of the matchup. You know, the Colts with no Andrew Luck, there's no draw for you to watch the game. Now, next Monday night, see what they have next Monday. Next Sunday night. Next Sunday night is Houston and Kansas City. That's pretty good. It's a good game. You got Deshaun Watson, rising star. If the Chiefs win tonight, they'll be undefeated. I think that game might do pretty well next week. The game might do pretty well. By the way, the game in Seattle last night got a 42.5 rating. Ironically, in Indianapolis, they only got a 21 rating. Even they're like,
I think they're sick of seeing Scott Tolzien and Jacoby Brissett, which I don't blame them.
Yeah. Now, you know, again, when you consider the matchup, down 5%, not as much as I thought it would be. I thought it'd be down maybe 10%, so it really wasn't down as much. And I think if Kansas City wins tonight and you set up Kansas City and Houston, because Watson did such a great job last week for Houston, really felt like it was the emergence of a star out there.
I was stunned by that game yesterday. Because I love Tennessee. I love them coming into the season. And I know Marcus Mariota got hurt, too, had the hamstring. But still, for them to beat Tennessee that badly, I couldn't believe it. That's a huge win for Houston. I'm curious to see where this goes now with them. Because they have the defense to win them games. And if Watson can do something here and keep improving with the weapons that he has on the outside, Houston might be the AFC South contender now.
Yeah, very much so. Because they do have the defense. Of course, they don't have Brian Cushing.
Yeah, well, they're used to that anyway.
Yeah. No question. That's
So, Steve, are you done picking the Raiders now after they've let you down the last 2 weeks? I had to ask you that after Friday's show.
Gone. Gone. Finished. Finito. All right. As far as I'm concerned, it's back to 2009. The Raiders stink. They're off my chart. My brother and I, a couple scores came in Saturday night. My brother's sitting in the living room. He looks at me and goes, getting killed her. I said, I don't even know who you picked. I said, Kevin, I don't even know who I picked. I said, I just got to sit there and go, oh, yeah, that sounds good. Oh, yeah, that sounds good. I said, I do three of these in a week. I do one in the television show where they give each one of us a game to talk about. And so I'll talk about the game that I have. And the game I had this week was Georgia-Tennessee. All right, so I had a pretty good feel and handle on what I wanted to do with that. I thought Georgia would win easily. I can't even tell you the other three games that were picked on there.
It's a lot to keep track of, I bet.
I can't. I sit there because they asked me to take the sheet when I'm done, our rundown. I just circle who I think is going to win. I hand it back. Then Jack, Derek, and I do the Best Buy segment on the pregame show. Now, here's one. We don't even know the games until Roger says it on the air. So we're not exactly sitting there loaded with information and research as to how we feel about particular games. Yeah, this game's coming up. Okay, and if it's a night game, they're limited. Because they're not going to have you pick games that are already in progress. So, if Penn State's playing a night game, it cuts down the number of games to pick. Now, Saturday coming up, it's going to be a wide range of whatever. You know, I'm sure we'll get like Michigan, Michigan State, or something like that. But I think one of the games they had us pick was Michigan State, Iowa. And I did pick Michigan State. But, and the reason being was, you know what I did? Now I think back, but you know what I did?
What's that?
I picked Michigan State in this show, and I picked Iowa on the network.
Hey, so you couldn't lose either way. That's an interesting strategy.
No, it means you can lose either way. I lost on this show.
Oh, that's true, right.
I won on this show, and I lost on the network. It's like, come on, I don't know. I was sitting there, I was thinking, when I was done picking, and I remember sitting there thinking, I think on Friday at WKOK, I picked the other way, didn't I? All right, whatever. This is not the Manhattan Project. It really doesn't matter what you come up with. It just doesn't matter. All right.
That was a big win for Michigan State, though, after that clunker against Notre Dame.
It was. And for Iowa, the one area about Iowa is concerned about is that you're playing on the road. You just played in the heat. You lost the game. Defense was on the field 99 plays. It's too much. I just thought that was just too much for them to overcome. Now, Michigan State's got Michigan. Okay, that's going to be... I'm going to be very interested, actually, in that game. very interested. You know, and for you take Michigan State, for example, I mean, what's really frustrating for them is it's Michigan against Michigan State, and it's not the last game of the season. You know, the Big Ten is a conference that only has three states in it where there are two Big Ten teams each. Illinois has Illinois Northwestern, Purdue, Indiana, Michigan, Michigan State. Everybody else is a standalone. You know, there's only one Big Ten team in Minnesota, only one in Nebraska, only one in Pennsylvania, one in Ohio, one in New Jersey, Maryland, Wisconsin. And there's Michigan State sitting there. Now, Michigan, I think Michigan State got into the Big Ten in 1953. Michigan did not want Michigan State in the conference. They pushed hard, believe it or not, for Pitt.
How about that?
Yeah. How about that? It's right. Tomorrow, Brad Nessler, CBS Sports. Teddy Greenstein, Chicago Tribune. Big show tomorrow. Looking forward to it. Today's show brought to you by Purdy Insurance. Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. And we're in the Sunbury Motors studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf.